She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Mrs. Green. Here I am. And remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. What an important message in this incredibly challenging, information-filled world of ours. I want to just add that the show today is sponsored by an incredible organization making a huge difference for the planet on so many levels, Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. And it is certainly not just a retail operation that sells amazing used clothing and used goods, but they operate numerous other programs for at-risk populations. So your donations and your shopping there helps to support these populations, which makes the world a better place and makes us have a healthier planet. We're proud that they're our partner. If you're in Tucson, you can visit their website at goodwilltucson.org. They have stores all over the country, and they have made a huge difference for keeping waste out of the landfill. So I can't say enough about this proud partner. And remember, whatever you're getting rid of, don't throw it away. There's highly likely a use for it at Goodwill Industries, wherever you are. And we have, I'm so proud to have in studio today our guest, Linda Powers, and she's a professor of engineering and Bio5 Institute member at the University of Arizona. I saw a post about her on a publication, and within an hour, I was in touch with my traffic person saying, we have to get Linda on the show. She's going to share with us her incredible trip to Tanzania and a small town there about her journey of testing water for bacteria using a unique instrument design at the University of Arizona. So Linda, we're thrilled to have you here with us. It's going to be an exciting The Time Will Fly show. Eric Schoberg is online, and he is another proud partner, TEP, Tucson Electric Power. Eric, are you there?
I'm here. Mrs. Green, how are you today?
I am great. And I, Mr. Green and I were at the gala last night at the new building, the new gold LEED certified Tucson Electric Power building downtown. It was a great night.
Well, I've sure enjoyed the opportunity to actually move in. I'm located in that building, and as I think you know, I'm a LEED AP and accredited professional, and it was great for me to move into that building and see all of the things that I've worked on with other people and other projects, and get to live with them, so to speak. It's been really gratifying.
And you know what, Eric? It's a game changer. I'm using that a lot. I mean, having you house that building down there, TEP and Unisource taking the leadership, you should have heard the people that I was with last night saying, where are we going to go after this? Because there are about 10 places within walking distance downtown that you can now go. So it's breathing new life back into Tucson, and having it be gold LEED certified, that doesn't bother Mrs. Green at all. So that's not what you called about, and it's so unlike me to get off topic.
Well, it's one of my favorite off topics.
So I know. It's like the building is amazing. The water, you know, rainwater harvesting, and the, I just have to ask you this if you know the answer, and I think you probably do. How does the elevator generate power? It's a truly unique elevator. I went in, of course, and looked for the buttons to push, and you have to push the button before you get in, so I had to get out of the elevator. But how does it generate power?
Well, I'll tell you what I do know about it is the one of the main differences, and I don't know if it's generating or saving. It probably does generate in some way by storing energy when there's a number of people heading down, but you enter your floor while you're outside, and it tells you right away which elevator is going to open up, and it really saves time because you don't stand around in the elevator waiting to enter your floor and then, you know, have it take you. It's already programmed, and it's really a lot quicker. It takes a little getting used to, but it's one of the fun features.
It is fun. It is a fun feature, and it's just an amazing building and a really huge commitment to the planet in terms of what TEP is doing for energy conservation and green building. So kudos for that. You know, I'm a big fan. Now talk about, are you going to talk about the CFL buyback program? Because that's another great topic for me.
The buy down program, yeah, and it's a demand side resources program, you know, that we're doing to help lower the amount of power that we have to generate, but still give people all of the service that they need as far as, you know, lighting. We have it's tremendously successful, but it's so successful we've kind of been saving money a little bit on advertising and marketing it just because it's exceeded its goals. But you know how it works is we actually, instead of trying to give each customer, you know, a few dollars of rebate in a check or when right. they check out, we give the incentive money as a buy down to the manufacturer. And that really helps because then it kind of trickles down through the retailer and you actually get a bigger discount on your bulb for a smaller amount of money that has to go into the program.
And Eric, we did it. I mean, I there was to me, I'm the consumer that didn't like CFLs in the beginning, and then because of my ongoing education, the improvement, because I have one now at my bedside table, which is, it's a three, you know, it three-way. It goes up.
Oh, great.
I can have it on dim, I can have it on medium, or I can have it on high. And the most significant difference to me is it never gets hot. And I mean, it's right by my bedside table.
Yes.
So that's saving energy, and it, you know, reduces cooling because you're not heating the room with a bunch of hot light bulbs.
That's really
wild
true.
About it.
Well, I'd be the first one to say that, boy, CFLs have come a long way. And of course, being an energy efficiency kind of person, you know, I was an early adopter, and I'll,
right.
I'll admit that. But you know what? They're getting, they've gotten so much better. They come on really quick. They do have a little warm up time, but they're terrific. And I wanted to point out that our program, CFL buy downs, really we require that they be Energy Star bulbs. So you're
awesome.
Going to get a tremendously
right.
high quality. And, you know, look for them. They may not have a big sign, but right there on the edge of the shelf where the bulbs are stocked, you'll see the Bright Solutions label or the TEP blue label, one or the other. We're going to the Bright Solutions label, but not all of them. Sometimes still they just say the blue TEP label. And that way you'll know you're getting an Energy Star bulb, you're getting a terrific discount of at least $1 to $2 each. And
you're saving money on your electricity bill. If you change out your house, it's 75% more efficient. So I was not an early adopter in the CFL area, but I've adopted. So I'm good. I'm on board, and having association with people like you educated me. We found them quite easily in a big box store. I think we got ours at Lowe's or Home Depot, and it wasn't hard to find them in a sea of light bulbs. So
there you go.
How
well,
can
we
find
box...
Go ahead.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, we're in 12 or more retailers. You mentioned a couple, but there's Costco, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Ace stores.
Oh, Ace, that's
into...
good, the locally owned.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yep.
And what's
the
best way
to grocery stores?
For people to find out about you? I, of course, know the answer, but it's to find out about these programs. Great new website, by the way.
Fabulous new website at TEP.com. And, you know, we've got green energy. You can look under there for residential programs or commercial programs. We're always adding more information. And as you know, we're gonna get approval for new programs pretty soon, and there'll be even more great things to
And we'll
for.
Be sharing them on Mrs. Green's World. So, Eric, thanks for calling in on a Saturday, and I'll see you soon.
Oh, you're the best. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. That was Eric Schoberg from TEP. Our proud sponsor today is Goodwill. And the exciting news to come is our featured guest, Linda Powers, who's a professor of engineering and Bio5 Institute member at the University of Arizona. And she's going to talk to us about one of my favorite subjects, which anybody who's a part of my world knows is clean water. I'm borderline obsessed about the lack of it to some 1.5 billion people, the diseases that it carries. I'm involved in Rotary, so very active in Polio Plus and the eradication of polio. I mean, there's so many pieces to this. So Linda, thank you. And now I want to make it all about you. So let's get started. This is an incredible journey. And why don't you start about what you did, what your trip was about. I want to share with the audience about the instrument you used, what its initial application was. So I'll go back to these questions. I don't want to ask you 10 at once. So just tell us a little bit about the trip.
Okay, this was a trip that we actually didn't plan. We were invited by some colleagues of ours from the Michigan Technology University.
Right.
To go to Tanzania and to look at the problem with water quality there. And the reason we got this invitation is because my graduate students and I have been working on instrumentation, actually over the past 15 years, to such that it's handheld and you can take it, and you can take it wherever you want. You can look at the water, you can look at the food, you can look at the food preparation surfaces, and you can determine whether or not you have microbial contamination on these surfaces. And, you know, things get better as we get smarter about how to do these things. And we had, when they asked us to join them in the trip to Tanzania, we happened to have an instrument that was working at that time, and we could put it in a backpack, which we did.
That part, when I'm reading, I was literally saying, are you kidding me right now? So we'll talk a little bit more about the details of that, because it's pretty enthralling for someone who's sitting in my seat.
So my student and I packed up, put it in a backpack, and took off to Tanzania. And I don't know whether you've ever been to East Africa.
I have not.
But it's a fascinating place, and the people are wonderful. And here we were, running around with a backpack with an instrument and a bowl, and we were looking at the wells along the Great Rift Valley. And as most of you know, the Great Rift Valley is considered the birthplace of many rather bad diseases,
right,
the least of which is Ebola, Marburg,
right,
and
right,
several others. So it's also a malaria-ridden area. So the Great Rift Valley is a tough place to stay healthy. And so we were working with a small company there called Emsabi, which helps the local people in the local areas drill wells and put in capped wells,
right,
so that
right,
they're not open, and then worries about it, how whether or not
so
the
they
wells
really
are
want to monitor what they
delivering
put in.
Good
okay,
water. Yeah,
okay.
And so They escorted us around. They gave us a guide so we didn't get lost, which was a very good thing, actually.
Looking at where you were,
yes,
and you were on a bicycle for some of the time.
So some of the time we could ride a bicycle.
That blew me away, too.
To where we were going, and some of the time we couldn't. I hadn't been on a bicycle for about 30 years, so it was quite an experience.
What an adventurer you are. But let's just press pause for a minute on the part that you spoke to. The light bulb went on for me. When you say your instrument has the ability to detect the microbes on site, I thought about the difference being collecting a sample, putting it in a, you know, getting the swab, making sure that the sample isn't contaminated, transporting it someplace back to a lab. You're like on the spot, on site, monitoring and detection. I mean, it was like, I want to make that clarification, the implications and the applications for that globally, for this instrument can do, all, you know, for the incredible challenges we have with airborne diseases and other kinds of diseases. So I just wanted to stretch that out a little bit because, yeah, that's your on-site detection.
Yes, we are on-site detection. It works on light, and it has to do with the light properties of microbes and whether they're alive or dead. So if you have dead ones or spores, which are not functioning, not
right, right,
at the point at that time, you can say, well, you know, we have a lot of live bacteria, and you can do it with air. Certainly, we have an instrument which does worry about air. We have another instrument which is a flow-through instrument, so you could put it on, for example, the Tucson water distribution system,
right,
as an example, or any water distribution system, and it would just constantly monitor the water that's flowing through it, and if it finds that the microbial load, i.e. the number of live microbes in the water, has changed significantly, that it tells somebody. It rings.
Could you literally do it with a bowl of water from your tap?
Yes.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
You can.
I should have asked you to bring it. No, I'm only kidding.
It's about a foot square. It fits in my backpack, and it's not very heavy. It's made of plastic.
And I wanted to ask you too. You said you had your computer, so you could feed the information into the computers.
Yes, we have.
You have access to electricity?
No.
Okay.
So no. We were charging. We were running on batteries.
Okay.
But we were just using the little netbook.
Okay, computers.
Which don't use much
the wonders of technology.
Energy at
right.
all. That's right.
And so they're not as heavy.
Just charged them up. Most of the places in Africa at that time were only having 8 hours of electricity a day, and it was on a tri-swing. So, you know, you may have had...
You get eight.
And then there were 16 with nothing, and then... So
now, yeah. What about what you said? For 15 years, you've been working on the development. You and your graduate students. Was it initially to be able to test microbes in the water, or was your journey started with a different intention in terms of where are we going with this?
It
not Tanzania, probably when you started.
No, it was definitely not Tanzania. We were interested in looking at microbial contamination in general.
Okay.
And this, you know, there's some really obvious applications up front before we ever thought about it. You know, the hospital operating theater, hospitals, food
the
preparation areas,
facing,
you know, there's a whole slew of things. And when we first started out thinking about how to do this, we didn't have things like the LEDs that we use as
right.
the light source, the light-emitting
okay.
diodes. We didn't have those. We were using flash lamps, and they're much more bulky and hard to deal
right,
with.
Right, right.
But the technology has really come to the point where even our detector is only about an inch square. And
it's
so it's very small, and then we're using LEDs, and so our power consumption is very small. So now we can charge up batteries for 8 or 10 hours a day and go out in the field and make measurements all day long.
Now, how did they initially find you to invite you to participate on this trip and see how the whole deal was going to work? It's like, oh, yeah, let's call Linda at the U of A Bio Institute, Bio 5.
People who work in the environmental areas, we know each other, and we know the kinds of things that they're doing. One of the graduate students from Michigan Technology University is a Tucsonian.
Okay.
And he saw another write-up that was in the UA Now thing about this. And so we all decided to get together, and we chatted about what we should do, and came up with the trip to Tanzania.
Right. Well, I can't, you know, I get to the point where the absorption of information just coming out of the University of Arizona, I check U of A Now every day, because on almost every level that I can think of, and even in the interdisciplinary areas and tying arts to the environment, it is a treasure trove for Mrs. Green to be able to do that. And I find great guests doing things that have global implication. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Yes, there is. There's no question about that. And, you know, the University of Arizona has something that I don't believe really any other school in this country, or maybe even the world, has, and that is they have such an incredible interdisciplinary interaction, so that if I wanted someone to work with me on a particular project and I didn't have that expertise, it's very easy to interest your colleagues into joining in into one of these large kinds of efforts. And the University of Arizona is really unique in that it's so easy to do it here. It's encouraged by by the administration for us to do things like this. And so it doesn't matter that, well, you might be a chemist or you might be a biologist and you can't
You
do
might
it.
Be an engineer and I'm doing this. And it's not protective of the research.
That's
it's
right.
much more of a
global
the partnership.
View.
And
yes.
I love it. And we're going to go take a short break. We have the pleasure of having in studio Linda Powers, Professor of Engineering of Bio5 Institute, with lots more to come from the University of Arizona. Please stay here with me. We will be right back.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green. Do you know that you can save up to $258 a year on fuel costs when you drive a VW 2011 Jetta TDI clean diesel from Chapman? And you can travel up to 609 miles per tank and reduce those ugly, sooty emissions by 90%. And remember, Chapman doesn't just sell cars. They provide you with the best ownership experience possible. Visit them at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green said.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to love that concept. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And we had Eric Schoberg earlier on the show talking about the CFL buy-down program, about getting CFLs and replacing them in your home. I encourage you to do that. This show is sponsored by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. And our featured guest today is Linda Powers, professor of engineering and Bio5 Institute member at the University of Arizona. She took an incredible journey to Tanzania to test water for bacteria using a unique instrument designed at the University of Arizona. We are very thrilled and excited and proud to have you with us, Linda. And let's continue a little bit about where we left off. Is the person that contacted you was a former, he's a Tucsonan, and we were talking about the University of Arizona and the cross-pollination. You know, one of the things I just want to make sure we cover a little bit, the implications for that. You know, we have the Research Corporation for Science Advancement here, and their mantra is the same thing, to bring a lot of focus on solar and to share the technology and bring scientists from all over the world who have the latest and greatest. And I'm curious to know, when did the leadership for that start at the University of Arizona? I mean, has it been the way that it's been? Is the culture of the university to share important research and to cooperate for the greater good?
I suspect that it started quite a while ago, because when I came 5 years ago, I was one of the people they attracted to
awesome.
To this.
Okay.
But it was certainly there. It was the first thing that I saw, and I said, wow, this is wonderful. This is just like it used to be at Bell Laboratories. That was my first.
Oh, my gosh, and I'm from Jersey. I'm from New Jersey, so they had a big Bell Labs plant.
I was at Murray Hill at their basic research for the first 13 years of my career. And I said, oh, wow, this is like it used to be. There are no glass walls. You know, if I want to collaborate with somebody in the medical school, I don't have a problem.
The silo effect, I call it. I'm doing my work in my silo. Don't come here and don't look.
And consequently, I think the reward for that has just been phenomenal. And I think that's as much a part of the University of Arizona personality as anything. In fact,
it should be so much a part of their branding. I mean, seriously, and it attracted you, and I mean, many other unbelievable human beings that are doing great stuff there. Tell me a little bit about the Bio5 Institute. What is that? And it says you're a member of the Bio5 Institute.
Bio5 Institute is an institute, a building plus facilities,
great building
plus leadership. That was put together by the university and the state of Arizona and some donors, some very wonderful donors, such that all the bio-oriented research and development could be housed together so that there would be cross-pollination. Okay, so instead of getting each individual worker put out, you got what happened when you put it together as a group. And it's been an extreme success. The director is working now on what he calls translational medicine, and this is taking the medical discoveries and things out of the laboratory and out of the hospital and into the environment. And it's an exciting time.
It is an exciting time, and it's one of, we talked before we went on air, one of the purposes of my show is there is so much information out there in so many disciplines about bio or environment or biosphere, all of these things that impact mainstream people like me that are not engineers, that are not scientists. And it was funny, I went to this thing with Andy Refkin, and he was talking about the importance of translating science to the speaking English. And then I'm driving home and I'm listening to Ira Flatow on NPR. And guess I was cracking up by myself in the car. And guess what he was talking about? He's having a guest on that wrote a book that is talking about how scientists historically have done their work and they've published their research. And that's the scientific community. And now in this era, in this time, there is such a push within the scientific community for the early adopters to say, we have to have a Facebook page. We have to tweet. We have to put this out in general newspapers and promote it within the universities because people like me, we want to know. I want to understand what's going on.
And you know, you have Carl Sagan.
Right.
Basically, to thank for that movement.
For that.
He did a fabulous job.
He did.
And yes, and I agree with that. I think the more knowledge that we can give the consumer, the better decision the consumer can make, and the more power the consumer feels is in his own hands, as opposed to just following along, not really understanding or knowing what's going on. And the world has gotten a whole lot more complicated.
It has gotten complicated. And to go back to your research, the implication for that village, where the places where you went in Tanzania, I get it, it's really important. I'd like to know what you found, but then the implications when we think globally, act locally, applications that we could use right here in Tucson for looking at our food and vegetables and all that, and just inquiring as to whether or not there's an application. What did you find in your research when you went there to test the waters?
Well, we found that a few of the closed rope wells. These are actually capped wells that have a rope pulley so that you can pull the water up. were not as bad as the open wells. Okay, when you've got to remember that Tanzania is an incredible country with millions of animals running around. Okay, the Serengeti is
right.
For as far as you can see hooves, and so there's a lot of animal
interaction is a good word.
Waste,
walking in the water.
Mostly waste. Yes, that's right. And the waste, you know, after many, many rains goes down and somebody
it's all
goes into
go
the
somewhere.
Water table.
Right.
And it's also a country for which there is no infrastructure. So, you know, there's no way to get rid of harmful things except to dump them. And, of course, that ends up in the water table as well. And so it's a country that could certainly use some help, but their water is not clean. Their water definitely will end up causing people to be sick and maybe to die from it.
Well, I read in the published article that the life expectancy for men is 53 in this particular area, and for women it's 58, and it kills one out of every cholera or diarrhea or whatever, the water-related illnesses, one out of every 10 children before the age of 5. I mean, we have no idea in this country the implications for that, and yet there is an applicability to everything that's going on here. I mean, one of the Carson scholars was studying water in the Navajo Nation, and she said, I went down there and I thought it was like a third world country and some of the contaminants and the challenges they have with water. So I really get that. Now, what about when you are, I have to ask a rather mundane question, like things like, well, where did you sleep and how did you protect, I mean, the mosquitoes? Did you have to get, you know, I would be very, you know, I'd be scared a little bit going to Tanzania and knowing what could happen and what kind of water did you drink while you were there?
Well, that's actually quite a good question. And yes, we were certainly vaccinated before we left. Malaria is a terrible problem. And
it's
the Great Rift
disease.
Valley, yes, the Great Rift Valley is probably the worst area. So we were right in the middle of it. We all had lots of mosquito netting, and we had lots of mosquito spray to keep them off of us.
Right.
I wore long pants, long shirt. I covered up as much as I could.
Right.
It was only in the 70s, and it's temperate, even though you're sitting on the equator.
Right.
In that respect, where we slept depended on where we were. We did stay at a place called Peace House. It is a private school that is sponsored by some religious organizations in the United States, and it's specifically for students who have no family due to the AIDS epidemic and other epidemics, cholera and so forth, that happen frequently. It's to help educate students that have nothing. No family, no nothing. And they do have housing there that you can stay. You drank bottled water.
For sure.
And oftentimes you'd even boil that.
Right. So. And you talked about how wonderful the people are there. And so many times when I interview people that have been there or that have gone there for business reasons or pleasure, that's a very, very common response. What is their level of awareness of the contaminants in the water? Not that they have a lot of choices, because if you're thirsty and the kids obviously are probably playing in the water, the same water that the animals walk through. So what is their level of awareness in terms of the exposure and the dangers, or is there?
Well, in the cities, such as Arusha, you know, the bigger cities, they're much more aware than out in the countryside. The people in the countryside live in their own world. There is no communication with the outside world. They raise what they eat what they can raise. It isn't like they go down to the store and buy something. There's no currency involved in any of it. So this is where you have lots of malnutrition and sort of lots of problem with disease. And the water comes from the nearby river. It comes from an open well that someone has dug and nobody has tested the water for. or in the case that this small company now is trying to work with the villages so that they put a well in each one of the villages. And while it doesn't solve all the problems, it certainly solves a lot of the problems. And these places go through a cholera epidemic just periodically, and it wipes out, you know, as much as half the population every time it happens of these small villages.
We just don't think about it in this country anymore. I mean, we had cholera epidemics that wiped out populations here, and we're just so blessed. I will tell you that I am conscious of every drop of water that I drink or use or turn on and don't waste when I'm brushing my teeth, because it's just, it's a gratitude that I had an appreciation that we don't. To us, water's free. It's mm-hmm. everywhere you go. You can get a fountain. You can go get a clean cup anywhere you want, so it's very different. Was it highly contaminated in the places that you went?
Yes, unfortunately, it was very highly contaminated. My students...
Even in the wells that were capped?
Yes. Yes. Some okay. not as bad as others. The open wells in the rivers were the ones that were just frightening. And, of course, the population in these small villages were not educated much towards this fact, even though education is one of the major efforts that this small company, MSABI, is making. And
they cared enough to bring you to come back and see if the work they had done was being effective. So then they do repairs?
Yes.
What was the...
intent. They want to monitor every so often how well their wells are doing and do they need to make adjustments. And they're trying to educate the local people who don't have any education in this area about the do's and the don'ts with water. And my students working with this finally kind of got to the point where they didn't really want to take a shower. And I have to admit, me too.
Yes, I agree. And if you do, keep your mouth closed. I mean, just
don't
put your... I know. It's just things that you're right. We so take for granted. Now, in terms of the instrument, what's the status of that right now? I'm totally intrigued by the concept and what you've done and where is it being used? And is that something that you could train people from other organizations to take the instrument? And is there going to be more widespread applicability to this incredible discovery that just reads it through the water and the LED lighting?
Having worked on this for a while, you know, you make mistakes,
right.
Go back and you fix them. And I now have a small company which can make these instruments, and it's doing some development for the federal government, particularly in looking at bloodborne pathogens for one possibility, but also for use in third world countries. We need to do some more work because we need to get it down to being so cheap that there can be lots of them. And right at this point in time, it needs some work on the economics of it. We need to be a little smarter about how we do things and not use such expensive components, which, you know...
And not compromise the quality and the integrity of the
exactly.
outcome.
Exactly. That's sort of where we are. But we do have a small company that's working towards that. And, you know, we're interested in coupling with any company anywhere in the world that has some interest in working with us to accomplish this. Yes, this could be of significant value.
Significant impact. I'm serious.
It's
and
true.
A lot of the venture capital firms who haven't been investing in things are probably looking for someplace like you, whether or not you want to partner with a venture capital.
Well,
but there are green VC companies that are really looking for this type of opportunity to make a difference, not just make money.
Right. It isn't clear, you know, we need to do some more economics on the system before that's
get
really
to
a
that
feasible
point.
Thing. Yeah.
That's right. And then we'll have you back on the show and I'll say, just remember Mrs. Green. But all kidding aside, the applicability, what I can see, and are you continuing to look at not just the applicability for things like the water, but for the research in hospitals, which is such a huge challenge to us in the United States, to us here in Tucson, around the globe, the resistance to, you know, the bacterial strains and hospital rooms terrify people.
Yes, they should.
Yeah. That's very comforting, but you'd really have to live in a hole to not know that, or live in a cave.
Yes, I would agree. One of the directions that we have taken is that we are now developing this technology for point-of-care diagnostics. So if somebody gets sick, you don't have to go to the hospital to at least to diagnose it. You may well have to go to the hospital to get it treated, but to diagnose it to decide whether or not, you know, this person's got hours or they've got days to get to the hospital.
Okay, unbelievable. Stories about that abound. So we are going to take a short break. In studio guests, wonderful conversation. Linda Powers from the Bio5 Institute, a professor of engineering from the University of Arizona. Please stay here with me. I'm hanging on her every word. Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green. Do you know that you can save up to $258 a year on fuel costs when you drive a VW 2011 Jetta TDI clean diesel from Chapman? And you can travel up to 609 miles per tank and reduce those ugly, sooty emissions by 90%. And remember, Chapman doesn't just sell cars. They provide you with the best ownership experience possible. Visit them at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road, too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. The boys are back in town. The girls are here, too. We have our friend Scott Caddow from Legendary World visiting us again. It's always so much fun. And as we were prepping, he told me we were going to talk about virgins. I warned him that this was a family show. And so what are we going to be talking about, Scott? You're always full of surprises.
Actually, it's Virgin Atlantic Airline.
Oh, okay.
Which most of us know about. And actually, it's more about Sir Richard Branson, who is the CEO and founder of Virgin Records.
Very
Virgin
familiar
Soda,
with him.
Virgin,
yes.
Now, be nice. But no, it's an article caught my attention. You'll have to laugh. The headline says, Sir Richard Branson, biofuel research, a valuable waste of time. And I look at this and I'm like, what? And I got into it. It's a play on words. And what they've done is, a lot of people don't realize, Virgin Atlantic Airlines actually had the first biofuel commercial flight 4 years ago. So this is not new technology.
So he's an early adopter.
Well, obviously that was, you know, they did a test flight and they've been refining it. And what they're doing now is they formed a separate entity, which, you know, everybody knows Richard Branson's a serial entrepreneur with these hundreds of companies, but it's a new biofuel company. And what they're actually doing is they're taking the waste gases from coal mining and from steel mining facilities and turning it into biofuel.
You are kidding me. How come Mrs. Green did not know that?
I don't know.
I'm so sad.
Why I'm here. I keep bringing new things to you and your listeners.
The precious green gems.
But he's made a commitment to bring use by 2025 25% of the fuel in Virgin Atlantic Airline, which now there's Virgin America, there's Virgin Blue in Australia. So again, they're
Virgin
spinning
Mary.
Off these other airlines, Bloody Marys.
Different show. We digress.
Anyway, so the nice thing about this concept is they're actually able to produce the fuel locally, because of course we all know there's coal mines, steel mines all over the world. So it's not about creating something in you know, England, and then shipping it, you know, that whole thing. So it's just, it's a great concept to be able to create these fuels all over the world, use them locally, refueling jets. And I think by 2025, you know, knowing the way he's gets things done, we'll be seeing that on commercial flights.
It makes me really excited. And I know a lot of times there's such bad news out there, and it sometimes it's shocking to me, because when you live in my world, I'm constantly reading research about what's fun, innovative, new, the greenest technology, what companies are trying to do to be more sustainable. And then I hear bad news and I'm like, oh, that's just really not the place I want to live.
Right.
I think there's a lot of hope for the future and things like this. I love that you share these things
well,
with me.
Well, it's great that he's actually
I can't know
doing
everything.
It. Because the other thing, too, I read a lot of these stories, too, and it's their concept stuff. And
right.
This is not concept stuff. Even I was just, you know, looking at the article the other day, and actually he's saying within 12 to 18 months of now, they'll be using biofuel on their flights from London to China and London to India. And those are the first places they're producing it. So they will be using it. This is not
high
in the sky stuff.
And no kidding. You talk about he'll have plenty of fuel from India and China, because they're building a lot of coal-fired power plants. So that makes me really happy. That'll save pollution for the whole planet.
Yeah, they're going to siphon off those waste gases and create biofuel.
Oh, it's so great. I cannot believe that technology exists. How do people find you to get all these tidbits of information and book a trip?
Book a trip. Legendaryworld.com is our website. It's the best place to get a hold of us. A lot of information there
You talk to real people.
You do talk to real people. Again, the nice part about our website, we have tons of information. You can't book anything there by design, so you need to call us. Lots of times people come and say, I want to do this, and we'll spend 5 or 10 minutes with them. It's like, you don't want to do that.
No, and I'm just going
I just saw an ad in the paper. That's what I want. It's like, no, you
don't. No, you don't. It's false advertising. But I want to do a little personal story here. I have friends that haven't used Scott, that know Scott, and then they're sorry, and then they go to Scott and say, can you fix this? And then you have customers for life, because they see the amount of detail and time you put in. Scott, it's always a pleasure having you with
us,
and you share such great information. We love him. We love him. It seems to me every show that I do, whatever Scott's talking about, it's timely and it's integrated. And we, you know, Linda and I get to do a little talking to each other while Scott's on. And when we went to the break, our guest in studio today, we are just so absolutely fortunate to have Linda Powers, professor of engineering and Bio5 Institute member at the University of Arizona. I want to say those fast because there's so many questions left that I want to ask of you. But we were talking about the implications, the applications for your instrument that you have been working on and the evolution of it, and a disposable point of care medical diagnostic for microbial related diseases. And I actually get that. So the implications for it are great in third world countries. There are many rural areas in the United States where it's 3 hours to get to a good hospital, maybe five.
Arizona.
So Arizona, it's a big state out here. Like I said, I'm from Jersey, not hard. I mean, you drive a little bit on the turnpike or the parkway and you're in some major center. But there's even places in Jersey that are not as populated. So tell us about where that research is going and what the hope, possibility, and change. I mean, the light bulb certainly has gone on for me.
We have we've had an effort in this direction for quite a while, and it's been funded by the Navy, who's very interested in having such things available.
I can
so on
see
their
the
carriers.
Importance for the military.
Yeah, and the carriers and at places that are really very difficult to get to and from, and so they've been providing us with funds to develop some of this, and we have a point of care where you can use a body fluid, for example, blood or sputum or urine or a body fluid, and you can
unbelievable
put it on it. It's like a pregnancy test. You sort of put it on a little tab, and then you rinse it off, and then you shine the light on it, and the light tells you whether or not there are the microbes that you're looking for are captured on this.
Now,
this
in my future, there is TV. So this is one of the times I get really frustrated, because I'd love to show people what the instrument looks like, because it gives people hope and thinking about possibility and change. Anytime I'm on the show, I'm always thinking about a brighter future because of people like you. I have to ask this before I forget in my whirling dervishness. So Bell Labs engineer, now game changer, for the planet in terms of microbes. What was the evolution and the steps that took you from that? I mean, engineering, marrying science, relating to water and germs and the health of our planet.
Well, it actually started a little earlier than Bell Labs. As a graduate student, I studied chemistry and physics and mathematics and engineering.
I'm impressed. Okay.
I have a couple of degrees in chemistry and a couple in physics and one in
insatiable
biophysics.
Quest
so I also
for knowledge.
Had the bio.
Right, okay.
And when I went to Bell Laboratories, it was a fabulous place, but when I went to Bell Laboratories, I was very interested in building instrumentation to look at molecular level interactions in biology. Okay, and I did that actually for a number of years. And then AT&T went through the divestiture.
Right, right.
And so, you know, eventually it
there are those of us that still remember that,
yes.
And people won't. Yeah. Our kids will not. They had
it's
no idea.
It's probably the best research laboratories in the world.
That's
and
really...
they were supporting themselves, but that's neither here nor there. So I then went to academia, and again, with very much with the idea of applying all that I could take from chemistry and physics and engineering to biological problems. And it was there that I got really interested in the microbial problem, simply because it was so in the dark ages. Nobody has been able to use a lot of technology to find these things which you can't see without a microscope.
Right, right.
Or to be able to deal with all the problems. And almost everything bad you could think of, maybe with the exception of cancer, comes from microbial-related diseases.
And, you know, we talked about off-air a little bit about, I'm sure there's a lot of things that you know a lot about. It's not just this whole area that I'm highlighting, but the question, this practical question that comes to mind, and I'm sure you have an answer. I will not put you on the spot. I read a lot about the pros and cons of antibacterial soap in households. So I know she's laughing. I wish this is the great for the video. So what's your let's hear your official position on antibacterial soaps in our house.
No, they're a great idea, okay? Because they keep, you know, you use the antibacterial soap, and as soon as you're touching other things, you know, you redo it. But the fact of the matter is you're at least conscious about washing and trying to keep that down. Just pure soap is a major help in keeping down the bacterial load. There
to me,
no
that's
that.
A real, I love that answer, because to me there's a whole idea of just going back to the basics, and we washed our hands with soap and water, and it's for a lot of people it's much more economical. If you're using a bar of soap, it's far less waste. I mean, there are really good things for good old fashioned. So washing your hands is the message you would give to the listeners.
Yes, and you know, our universe is so full of microbial
life everywhere. Right. Right.
You know,
living on
you
us.
Have different microbes than I have,
right.
Than other people in the population, and it's very easy for these things to go from one environment to another environment. And so, yes, anything that you can do to reduce the total microbial load, one of which is washing your hands with soap.
And reducing the microbial load. I love that. Now back to the project in Africa. We still have some time left. What will your ongoing involvement and your graduate students' involvement continue to be, if any, with that project for the clean water in Tanzania?
Well, we're still working with a small company. We're just getting ready to put together for them and for a scientific publication all the results from the data which we took. We have it. We were at some, maybe 100 different wells, and it's geographically how it's spread. There's not a lot of information on the aquifers, so possibly by looking at the wells that have similar kinds of contamination, some of them had organic contamination and an organic layer floating on top of the water, and certainly that could well be something that's floating on top of the aquifer. And so we will try and put this together, and we will give the small company and the government that is concerned about that our results, and hopefully that will help. It's important that people like us, who are capable of doing it, to support some of these very small companies that are trying to help people in these really remote places. And that doesn't mean just Tanzania. I mean, there are a lot of these places. There are a lot of these places in the United States, as you just pointed out.
Right.
And I think it's important that, no, maybe it's not FDA approved yet, but can it make a difference? The answer to that's yes. And I think we need to, we as scientists and engineers really do need to be cognizant of this fact. And of course the students, I always like to train the students to be that way.
And that's the appreciative, always ongoing inquiry into what is next. The questioning to me, it captivates me. The other thing is that the bell, you know, the bell rang, the light went on, whatever, is about, I just don't think we always think through we're sending our young men and women, in many cases, to places like Afghanistan. Thankfully, they're coming back. They're going to some of these places where they're not going to turn the water on in the faucet in the house where they're staying. They're out in the field. So the military research, I'm sure they're hungry for ways to protect our soldiers when they go to places where their very health every single day is at risk, aside from the atrocities of war, the dangers of that.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, regardless of what you may think of defense efforts, they do spend a whole lot of money on research and development to protect
Agreed.
The soldier. And I'm for it 100%.
I'm for it 100%.
A number of the things we find in our hospital actually came from that military money that created those things, which are now thought to be just in the general
helping
public, but
all
they
of us
came
from military research,
it
funded
did.
Money,
yes.
funded
and,
research.
And you look at the vaccines for a number of these really bad things, all of that development has come from the Army, from DOD. So they have always had a big hand in trying to keep the soldiers healthy.
They're doing a lot of research, even in terms of energy conservation, with solar. And again, it's another area where the money that they're putting in for, we have friends, Kathy Rankin and Marshall, they own a air cooling and heating system place here, and they're working with the military on a project. And it's research and development. Mm-hmm. What about, I just have to ask you this, because you do the cross-pollination, I read a lot about, and I've gone to conferences where they've demonstrated, like the solar water cookers, and the solar, where you can, certainly solar backpack, where you can charge your backpack through solar. Is there an appreciative, is your viewpoint favorable for someone that doesn't have access to clean water? Can they work to purify your water if you're in the middle of a village in Africa and the sun's beating down?
Yes, I mean, certainly. You heat up the water, you kill the microbes.
Kill the birds, yeah, right, kill
sure.
the germs.
So yes, the answer to that is yes. And in fact, that's what they try to teach these people in the villages, is that go draw the water and then boil it. But it doesn't taste very good after you do that to it. And so, you know, not everybody listens.
And that's a really good point for Americans who have become absolutely consumed with bottled water, which is one of my, it's like, just don't get used to it. And they say, I only like this kind of water, I only like that kind of water. People care about how their water tastes. We, of course, drink water from we do have a filter on the refrigerator, but that's where we get our water, because no bottled water comes forth in here. So what is your next great, exciting project that you want to tell us about? Or if people want to know more, where can they go for research?
Well, we have a number of other exciting projects. We don't really
another
much
show.
Have
another yes, show. Okay.
Really don't have very much time to get into it. But there's UA Now would be a very good place for people to look and see for the kinds of research that are going on there. Bio5 has a huge website,
lots of information.
Yes, take a look at that because there's lots of exciting things going on.
And they can always ask me how to get to you. So thank you so much, Linda Powers from Bio5 Institute, professor of engineering at U of A. Next week, Debbie Claggett, owner of TriSports, one of the biggest companies in the globe to provide athletic equipment. Mom, business owner, community leader. Can't wait for next week either. Linda, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was great.